The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, everyone's got a story. You know, that's what we do here at Second Print Comics. We tell stories, or we tell stories about stories. We tell stories about us reading stories, which are, in fact, stories. Does what I'm saying make sense? I don't know. But the point is, today we're going to hear a story, an origin story, the origin story of one of perhaps our very first fan, but definitely one of our first fans, our friend Eric. We'll bring him in just a second. But first, I got to bring in my partner in comic book crime, Remzo. I'm going to put it back again. W. Martinez. W.
Damn straight. Got to steal that shit back from George Bush. He brought us middle W name people back 100 years.
Yeah, we'll get there. It's a struggle. But Remzo, what's happening this week? I feel like I'm caught in a time loop, but because we took some time off, we are in a little bit of a time loop in that we are catching up on all the Patreon-produced episodes that we had in the bank from our Kirby Club-level patrons. I believe after this one with Eric here today, we're going to be caught up. It's been a hell of a journey. And then we get to go back to actually produce our own episodes. So that's exciting.
You know, it's just like Thanos once he got that reality stone, and he's just like, reality can be anything I want it to be.
There you go.
So yeah, it's all over the place, but you know, it's fun. I finally feel that after it's now March, end of March, after 3 months of finally really jumping into things, we've been putting out some banger freaking episodes. People love the new SPC reissued and the pop formats. People love the Patreon content coming out. We've got an awesome Facebook community. People have really been digging the random comic panels that just bring a little glimmer of joy in their lives as we look at just some random shit while we're doom scrolling on the shitter like we all do. It's not just me. It's, you know, I feel like we finally got our groove back, baby. I feel like it's happening.
I do feel like we're, what's the phrase? Turning on all wheels? That's not a phrase, is it? No. Rolling on all cylinders? Something like that.
Shooting in all pistons?
My memory cells are fading every day. But nonetheless, we are back with another Kirby Club produced episode. And it wouldn't be a Kirby Club produced episode without a Kirby Club producer. So I will now bring in the man. He wasn't a man at the time. He was just a boy who first introduced me to comics. But he's a man now, darn it. Eric, what's up, buddy?
Shazam!
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me again. Hey, Remzo.
What's up?
Well, I guess I'll do a 2 second recap. Eric first introduced me to comics. I think he was probably we're sitting at the lunch table talking wrestling or something. And then I'm pretty sure it was I saw some crazy like Spider-Man or Carnage comic. That story has been told on this show several times, so we don't need to go all the way into detail. But what I would like you to go into detail on, Eric, even though I do think you have actually told this one at some point as well, maybe as a Patreon show. I don't know. But
sure.
The comics we're going to be talking about today are actually your very first comics. So we're actually going to get a little bit of your comic book origin story here as well.
Yeah, so I think it's been pretty well told that my favorite comic book as a child was The Uncanny X-Men. And the story arc that we're going to be covering today are the very first Uncanny X-Men books that I ever read. I believe it is Uncanny X-Men 232 through 234, which is a fantastic story with the Brood.
The Brood. Now, this is the kind of thing I would normally go to Remzo for, but since you're here, Eric, what can you tell me about the Brood? and this is not to be confused with the early 2000s, late 90s pro wrestling trio consisting of Edge, Christian, and Gangrel.
No, not at all.
Yes, unfortunately, that would be a hell of a crossover, though. I would totally pay for Wolverine versus Gangrel, but that's a whole other thing.
Unfortunately, Disney has not bought WWE yet.
We're quickly losing the non-wrestling fans.
Yes.
That is right, yet. So The Brood, which debuted in Uncanny X-Men 155.
Ooh, this guy's coming with facts.
I am coming with facts.
You're more prepared than Remso and I have ever been for an episode.
Ever.
I have handwritten notes, and I expected said question.
I feel like he put too much.
Can you tell me the rest of the questions you expected? Because I didn't have any more, so that would really help me.
I will. If you ask it, I'll let you
okay.
know.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
But these are this is actually a race of aliens that are in fact based off the aliens from the movies.
Yeah, they look exactly like those aliens. Like they're not even coy about it, really.
They're brown instead of black, so there's a little bit of a difference, not too much. But these aliens do have the ability of infusing with their host body, so they can take over the person that they're infecting.
Well, that's just no fun, but
it is fantastic.
Eric, how did you first stumble upon these particular comics? What caused you to even open those pages in the first place?
Yeah, so these particular books were one of the first ones that were in that box of comics that I found in my cousin's garage. So when I was sorting through them, you know how I've mentioned I really like the covers. These are the first covers that I saw that I was like, wow, what are these books? And yes, I'm going to open these and start reading these right away.
Had you seen the Alien movies at that point? Did that connection stand out?
I don't think so. I think I was probably 11 or 12 at the time. And I had seen them by then.
I guess my parents were a little looser on that stuff.
I think your parents were a little bit more liberal on the
which is surprising because they're very conservative people. But I remember watching every freaking horror, scary movie that ever existed without issue.
Maybe it's because in the first Alien, nothing happens for the first three quarters of the movie.
Remso, do we really have to have a great Alien debate? Now, I will say Alien has one of the best sequels of all time. Aliens is one of the better sequels that have ever been made.
Far.
I'm going to make another case while we're doing tangents. I said the other night that the best third part of a trilogy of all time, in my personal opinion, is Back to the
Rocky
Future
3.
Rocky to the Future 3?
Hey, Marty, we got to go back in time. Your kids are dickheads.
Was it Tony? That was the one of a Tony Danza, I think.
It was there.
Back to the Future 3. But Rocky 3 is very good. It's a good candidate. It's one to consider. But Back to the Future 3. First of all, you got time travel. Okay, that's already awesome. We already love the Back to the Future movies. And you also have an awesome Western in the same movie. I think it's actually my favorite Back to the Future movie.
You like the one with the hoverboards?
I like all of them, but I like the Western as well. Anyway, you have no opinion on this, Eric?
I have never seen Back to the Future Part 3.
What? Oh, suddenly something that I've seen
get
that somebody
here.
Else has
get out of the
seen.
Show. You're not allowed in here with
How
that.
Does
go
it feel?
Watch go watch all Back to the Future movies now.
How does it feel?
That's incredible. Have you seen the original Back to the Futures?
Yes, I've seen number 1 many times.
And not number 2.
I probably saw Back to the Future 2 or 3 times.
Do yourself a favor. One day when it's raining out in there, Connecticut, or maybe you're snowed in and you and the lady just want to hang out and sip some wine all day long, watch the trilogy. Do the whole thing for me.
There's no incest.
And in return, I will finally review the Warrior comics.
I can do that. Oh, wow. Wow.
And then we'll do a review of the Back to the Future movies on the show. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked, as we often do here at SBC. But we are going to now dive into these Uncanny X-Men issues. It's very exciting stuff. So I'll do my best to guide us through with a little help from my memory, some hastily taken notes, and my wife's iPad. That's how I finally solved my I can't read Marvel Unlimited anywhere. Marvel Unlimited, let me tell you this right now. It doesn't work on Amazon Fires. I learned that after I bought an Amazon Fire, assuming it would work because Netflix works, like video streaming apps work. No, still didn't work. So finally, I just remembered that I bought my wife an iPad, which means I bought myself an iPad.
Does it not just download?
No, it's not even, it doesn't exist for Fire. Like it doesn't work for Fire. It's not designed to work with it.
Good Ouch. Times,
right?
App stores.
Between that and the removal of the random Marvel Comics button, I'm about fed up with it. But otherwise, you know, and on the flip side, I spent like, 3 hours reading John Byrne Fantastic Four comic books the other day. And it was a seamless experience. So, yeah, what are you going to do? It's a good app. I'm not going to lie, but they pissed me off. Anyway, thanks to the Marvel Unlimited app, MarvelUnlimited.com, you can now read these along with us if you so like. So this is Uncanny X-Men number 232, written by Chris Claremont, drawn by who, Eric? It's your next question.
Mark Silvestri.
Mark Silvestri.
Dan Green.
That's correct. So this is a who would eventually go on to become one of the. Was he one of the? He was one of the Innovid founders, right? Or did he come on afterwards? He did Darkness.
He definitely left for Image.
Yeah, but he was not one of the six founders. He came on afterwards and did Darkness.
I'm pretty sure he was one of the six.
Oh boy, this is where we display our ignorance. Anyway, moving in, this story is called Earthfall, and we start off, as we often see in the 80s and 90s, a group of gosh darn no good degenerate teenagers partying in the woods when what happens? Seemingly an asteroid or something crashes to Earth, but these kids run over to it. And lo and behold, it is not a normal asteroid. It appears to be a giant shark. What? Eric, what do you, I know you don't probably actually remember the experience of reading this, but try to channel your whatever year old self, 8, 9, 10 year old self here. What the hell do you think you would have been thinking seeing a shark land in the middle of the woods at the start of this X-Men comic? The hell is this?
Probably what I thought the other day when I was rereading this. This is probably the greatest comic book thing I've ever seen.
It's not even a regular shark. It's like a giant. I honestly, through the end of this, I still don't really understand what happened here. Did a brood land and infest, or did the shark just, where did the shark come from?
Obviously, it's a Sharknado.
It's really, really confusing to me because for a second I thought maybe a brood had infected a shark, but then why would it be coming from the sky? It seems like the brood came from the sky.
Sharknado.
I never understood it, and I don't believe they ever explained it. But there is seemingly a brood inside this thing. So they're investigating. These other cops are investigating this giant shark from the sky when this one cop, who we will later learn's name is Harry Palmer, I believe is his name. He is immediately eaten by a brown version of what is clearly the alien from Ridley Scott's Aliens movies, as Eric referenced. Eats a bunch of the officers. And then we kind of see this guy being approached sort of from his point of view or from the third person point of view by this other lady screaming, help me, before we cut scene to Alex and Lorna, who is known as Polaris. Let's see. Remzo, what can you tell me about Polaris? Pop quiz, hotshot.
Polaris is the third child of Magneto. Much like her dastardly father, she can go ahead and control magnetism in a way that's somewhat different. She can go ahead and project fields. She can go ahead and shoot magnetic bolts, similar to her sister, Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch. She would later go on to join the team X-Factor under the leadership of Havoc, who was Scott Summer Cyclops' brother, and she teeters between being a villain and a hero on the X-Men.
Indeed. So we then cut to, it's Harry, who is this now brood-infected cop, is almost ran off the road, or almost runs off the road, Alex and Lorna, who are just kind of passing them by, which really has nothing to do with the story. It's just like kind of showing them randomly interacting on the road before this other stuff goes down. We then go to Denver, Colorado, which is where Officer Harry is from, and they're investigating what we'll later figure out was like a mutant. It's this guy that was kind of like, it seems like he was breathing fire. There's like fire coming out of him, but it seems like it was like a power kind of out of his control. When the other officers aren't looking, Officer Harry takes out his little brood claw and shoves it into this guy's chest. So whether you put it together now or you put it together later, he is infecting, as the brood do, he is infecting another person, quote unquote, with another brood egg. Remzo, what do you think about the brood overall?
What's the difference between the brown brood and the black brood?
Is there a black brood in this?
No, I'm just genuinely curious.
The black brood is the alien from Ridley Scott, and the brown brood is in the X-Men. That's the difference.
Oh, I thought it had something to do with we're not like the other brood.
No, it's nothing like that.
Okay. One of them's real, one of them's not.
All right, I don't care about your thoughts on the brood.
I read too far into it.
Here's what I really want your thoughts on where we go next.
The claw is pretty phallic.
We go, it's very
being honest. It's just kind of,
it's like a, you know, maybe it's like a Lion King penis in the clouds kind of thing, you know.
It's very, you know. Let's move on.
Speaking of phallic, we move on to see X-Men friend Gateway. You know, he's not phallic. He does carry a staff sometimes, though, who is a little Aboriginal man. Frankly, across these three issues, we will keep going to this. This is like every scene with Madeline Pryor here is super trippy and weird. So just recall that throughout all these recaps. Who should I toss this to? This is a complicated one. I'm going to give this one to Eric. Eric, what can you tell me about Madeline Pryor?
Oh, Madeline Pryor.
Tough one. There's a lot here.
There's a lot to unpack. I'll tell you what I know. She is a clone of Jean Grey. She was cloned by, I believe, Mr. Sinister back in like Uncanny X-Men 165. And she has been the center point of many stories. She did actually marry Cyclops because Cyclops is
horny,
big time simp for Jean Grey, and only married her because she looks like Jean Grey. Had a kid with her, and she freaked out and became the Goblin Queen. What did I miss out on, Ramzo?
The son is none other than my favorite mutant, Cable.
But wait a minute, Ramzo, isn't Cable old?
Well, Cable in X-Factor went ahead and got infected by Apocalypse with the techno-organic virus. So Madeline Pryor and Scott Summers agreed to allow Rachel Summers, Marvel Girl, to go ahead and take him to the future.
Who is also the daughter of Scott and Jean from the future?
Which is a correct? Weird, well, it, ipso facto, just accept it. So basically Madeline Pryor takes him into the future where they can go ahead and not cure his techno-organic virus completely, but manage it so he can grow up and live a somewhat normal life in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
All right. Well, that's a hell of a tale. It's a hell of a life story, I'll tell you that.
It's a mess.
It's going to make
Madeline Pryor is really into black leather and lace.
Which sadly we don't see much of in this, but that's neither here nor there. We don't need to go down into our, dig deep into our personal.
She would totally have a hashtag Goblin Queen OnlyFans if it were today.
Yeah, so, you do get some demons.
Yeah.
So where does the crossover between the Phoenix and the Madeline Pryor stuff? Does that ever cross over? Because I thought there was something where like Dark Phoenix was really Madeline Pryor or something like that. Or am I mixing up stories that aren't actually related?
You have it every so often in which you have Madeline Pryor face Jean Grey. I think the last time you really had that happen was in Uncanny X-Men, and I think 2011. This is during the San Francisco era in which she came back with like a whole bunch of female villains to fight them and shit, and it didn't work out. It was
she's still
dumb.
A character, an active character?
Well, it's weird as they brought her back, and she's teamed up with Ben Reilly, who's now a bad guy again, who's going by the name Chasm in Amazing Spider-Man, and it's dumb as fuck. So, yeah, she's back. Are they using her well? No, because they don't know how to use characters anymore.
On the next Clone Couples Counseling. All right, moving along here, and we go into this trippy scene where it's kind of confusing what's going on here, because Gateway's opening a gate for her to go from wherever she is, like buying groceries, to wherever she is here on the Outback, but then she's also staying in this weird facility. Now, maybe it would help if I had read all the issues prior to this. Eric, do you know the context of why she is in this place? Because it's really just teased throughout this particular story, and then it's teased for Apple's story. Okay.
A whole bunch of issues spoil ago. This. A whole bunch of issues prior to this, the X-Men died.
When they
came back, they fought the Reavers in Australia. They beat the Reavers. They took over this particular base, and now they're in here. And as part of taking over this base, they also freed Gateway, who is the slave to the Reavers, and allowed the Reavers to.
Why is he got to be a slave just because he's black?
Whoa. He's an aborigine.
He's an aborigine. Okay.
Aboriginal.
Okay. Well, that's. I guess that makes it okay? No.
It does not. No.
The Reavers are like the cyborg mercenaries, right?
They were in Logan, yeah.
Yeah.
And they know she's a clone now, right?
I don't.
Or they think she's Jean Grey.
At this point, they know that she's not Jean Grey. They think, because of comics, that she's just a completely different person who happens to look like their dead friend.
Yeah, I don't think that big reveal's come yet. Scott recently left her, too.
Oh, because Jean is back.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. As he gets her pregnant, they're married, they're living in Alaska. As soon as he finds out that Jean is back, he's just like, bye, family. And, like many families, he goes off for a carton of cigarettes and doesn't return.
No, he takes the kid.
Oh, he takes the kid?
Yeah.
Damn.
He says, bye, Madeline.
Well, they kind of go through this a little bit in her like trippy flashback, flash forward here. They show her like in this one, she's just kind of doodling around. She draws like star symbol here, or not star, Dazzler symbol. She's just doodling, drinking some juice or a beer or whatever she's drinking when she sees on the news Or does she? Because we figure out she's just kind of like tripping balls here. She sees Scott Summers Cyclops with Jean Grey. And she's like, well, that's me beside him. Oh, wait, no, it's Marvel Girl, Jean Grey, the woman he loved before he married me. And she just kind of like smashes this screen. So it's not clear. Like at first I thought she was just seeing them, but it becomes more clear throughout the next issues that she's just like completely psychotically losing her mind alone in this facility. So they leave her. Do they think she's a regular person? So they leave her behind in this facility while they're out doing X-Men stuff. Cause in the beginning they showed they're each off. Most of the X-Men are off doing various things. Some of them are fighting Juggernaut. Some of them are doing other stuff. So she just gets left behind.
I guess so. Or her superpower is shopping. I'm not sure which.
Well, that's a superpower.
So he took the child, but left the credit card. Got it.
All right. Well, she's getting drunk. When we go back to Denver to see Harry, who seems like he is like he is actually the Brood. Yes, he is the Brood Harry here. And he comes into his own apartment when he is confronted by Psylocke and Colossus, and he immediately starts just kicking their butts because he's not just a Harry. He is a Brood Harry. So he kicks their asses and let's see what else happens here. It's a pretty long extended fight scene. Just this one Brood is able to pretty much fend off all the X-Men who, and the ones that start showing up besides this, we have Havoc. We have Dazzler. I think my favorite, and by favorite, I mean like the dumbest X-Men that's ever exists. I'm not sure if he's in this issue or he comes in a little bit. Yeah, he's in this issue. He's right here, is Longshot. Who wants to tell me Longshot's power? Do you even know? Have you figured it out?
I just read.
It's so dumb.
I just read Longshot 1-6.
Oh my god! You read a series?
Yeah, it's his.
Did someone pay story. You to do a podcast about it? Because that's the only reason.
Oh, it's because my one of my favorite villains, Mojo, is debuted in Longshot number 3. Anyway, so his secret power is luck.
And that's it. And he just points, aims at someone and does the long shot. And if he hits them just right, it'll like change their luck so that something better happens to them, basically.
Kind of.
Yeah, he just gets into lucky situations.
Can't he just use that on himself and just buy a lotto ticket and then not do all this stuff? Just bang Dazzler or whatever.
Can I say for the record that this Wolverine costume is actually my favorite? It's the tan classic costume he actually wore when they were fighting the Shi'ar Empire. He got brainwashed into being a more feral version of himself. And when he came back to Earth, he basically had Forge basically update it and make it less alien-y. And that's how he got the tan version of his classic yellow spandex. And I always thought, like, you know, everyone is like, oh, we want to see like yellow and blue Wolverine in the movies one day. Now I would kill to see
yellow
them
and brown,
you know, throw him in the yellow and brown, the tan suit.
Definitely the yellow and brown is the way to go. Tell me if I'm missing something or if this scene makes no sense at all. So they figure out he's a Brood, but Harry runs away. Wolverine is on the scent of him and he's running like through downtown Denver, tries to hail a taxi, couldn't get a taxi. And then he like jumps in front of this bus and stops the bus and gets on the bus. And then who is already sitting on the bus? But Rogue, can someone explain this to me? She just happens to be on this bus just in case this Harry guy stopped this particular bus and she was waiting there to jump him afterwards. Is it me? Did I miss something here? Anybody?
I wrote down because comics.
Okay.
I'm still getting over her hair.
That is an explanation.
Is that a mullet?
She's like Tulsi Gabbard times a million with all the huge white patch in the middle of her head. That is some incredible skunky 80s hair.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed. So this fight just ensues again now on the bus. I could definitely see this translating as like an action scene in a movie here because it just picks right up again. And Brood Harry is going at it with Rogue when who pulls Brood Harry out of the bus? It is, of course, Wolverine, who is not fucking around. He's ready to kill this guy because he's Wolverine and he's pretty much always ready. Harry runs away, but eventually he comes upon the cops. The fellow cops, and you know, he actually is a cop. So he, you know, he's just kind of uses the cops as a shield as the X-Men continue to run after him. Then they basically chase him down into this alley where they're confronted by a whole bunch of Brood. He is not alone. So Let's go around the room here, class. What are just your general impressions? You know, you can give me, Eric, you want your 8-year-old impression, or I'm what's your sort of a adult impression, I guess, looking back on this?
It's a little crazy. as is anything with the X-Men and their space adventures, even though this one happened.
They deal with a lot of space.
They have a lot of space adventures. I mean, my one thing is I'm wondering what happened to the giant shark.
I still don't understand.
Yeah, but what happened to it? Is it still on the Rocky Mountains? I mean, what's going on?
So, like, did a brood fall from the sky and jump into and infect a shark, and then also that shark flew out of the ocean back up into the sky and then down into this campsite? Because this is in Denver, this is in Colorado. There shouldn't be a shark anywhere near this. Yeah. And this is never addressed in any way, as far as I can tell in the story. We're just supposed to accept that for some reason there was a brood falling from the sky and a shark. And,
yep.
And I love it.
What would you rather have it's fall ridiculous. Out of the sky?
Nothing. Like, this is exactly what I want in this book.
Just like the leprechauns, it doesn't come up ever again.
We see as we go over to X-Men 233.
Can we point out that Wolverine kills a cop?
He kills a cop.
Oh, yeah, he kills a cop.
Are we just going to ignore that?
I was going to ignore that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, he kills a cop. This is during the 80s.
I should read my notes better because I looked at my notes and in capital letters it says Wolverine just goes after him and kills a cop.
Yeah, I want to emphasize.
But it's a brood cop. So that's the clincher.
It's a brood.
And he knew it was brood cop because he's Wolverine and he can sniff the brood. So it's okay.
Yeah, no, I just want to point out, like, other than the Punisher, especially in the 80s, you have Wolverine actually really, really stacking up a body count. And even though they justify it by saying it's a brood cop, you know, with the tan costume and everything, I always compare this to a point in which you're going to have Frank Miller come in. He's going to do his Wolverine limited series, and you're going to have a few more from there. And this is really the era in which Wolverine is going to stand apart from the X-Men, eventually get his own ongoing series, guest star in a whole bunch of other books. I mean, this is the type of era of the X-Men I love, in which they're really letting Logan be like the front and center X-Men for a change.
Yeah, and you do kind of get the impression that, sure, maybe Wolverine knew it was a brood cop, but if it wasn't, it would be no big deal.
The reader begins to question him, and that's what I picked up from this. It's like, oh, this is the era in which you don't always know if he's the good guy. Like, you know he's the good guy, but does he always do it because he knows what's happening, or just because he gets lucky because he does his thing and then somehow gets justified later?
Yeah, the X-Men question him on that as well. Havoc is questioning him a couple of times in this too.
Oh, yeah, that becomes a sort of a little running storyline of these next couple of issues here. But moving along to X-Men 233, where we learn what an exciting summer it must have been, because during the summer here, now on sale twice a month, you get X-Men every 2 weeks. Incredible. Which it actually is incredible, because now there's a lot of creative teams that can't seem to get a book out every month, every 6 weeks, every fucking 3 months, Eric Larson. So it's nice that they they're pumping these puppies out every 2 weeks over the summer for only $1 each over the summer of 88.
Wow. Thanks, Reagan. Real cool.
So moving into X-Men number 233, we start off, the X-Men are surrounded by the Brood X-Men, and this is where we learn a few things. We learn that these Brood were specially chosen and infected by Harry because they are also mutants. So that's why he was so interested by that guy who had been breathing fire, and why he infected him, because he was a mutant. And then, so now instead of just affecting regular humans, they're infecting mutants, so that they are not just brood with brood powers, but they are brood with mutant powers too. So I do always like when they take a villain that's already been established as somewhat of a threat. Sure, they've been defeated in the past because the heroes always win, but you know, they're seen as somewhat of a menace, and then find a way to upgrade them in some way, which then makes what otherwise would be a retread storyline, it gives it an added element of danger. What do you guys think?
Yeah, totally agree with that.
Yeah, I thought it was a really cool addition to the brood.
All right, well, we're all 100% correct, so that's excellent to hear. We also learned something else, that they have very, very lame nicknames, such as Brickbat and Tension. What do you think of these fucking horrible? I love when they come up with one-off villains, because you know they have just a pile somewhere of just unused, like totally lame names that are specifically that drawer of folder. I don't know why they need to be in folders, but whatever it is, where they pull these names out of. It's clearly just all reserved for villains that we're just going to use once and then kill, because it's always just a series of the lamest names you can ever imagine.
It reminds me of that scene from Dodgeball, an American classic, by the way, where White is introducing the Globo Gym Purple Cobras, and he's like, here, you've got Laser, Blazer, Razor, Michelle.
Razor. Hell of an underrated movie, by the way.
Watched it again recently. That holds up.
It holds up well. Let's see. Well, during this battle, when they reignite the battle here, we see that one of the mutants, I think it's the female one whose name I don't recall right now, but she has some sort of mind control abilities too. So not only do they have to deal with these brood mutants, but now they also have to deal with Psylocke and Rogue. Psylocke, and this has happened before in these early X-Men. I think it was in our very first review of the Jim Lee's X-Men. It's the situation where there's like in layers of inception of mind control. Like, so they're now mind controlling Psylocke, but Psylocke herself can mind control. So now we're like layers and layers of mind control. At some point you can't remember who's mind controlling who. You remember that, Remzo, when it was like Sabretooth was being mind controlled by Psylocke, who's being mind controlled by another character?
So much mind
control.
Tell
me I'm not crazy here. I'm just joyfully at this.
I got a little confused because I don't recognize Psylocke with so many clothes.
It should be pointed out how sadly unsexy Psylocke's outfit is. This is not the Jim Lee era Psylocke at all. I didn't recognize her at first either until she was referred
Take
to by name.
Take it off.
She almost
Take
looks like Spider-Woman, but with like different colors and also wearing a burqa for some reason.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that earlier when she first showed up in the previous issue.
Yeah, she is not really a sex object here in this one, kids, as she will definitely become in the early 90s.
This is also one of the worst X-Men lineups I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, there's no... I guess Wolverine is by far the best character here, but it doesn't really have the classics. All the classics are gone at this point. Is that right? Like we don't have, I mean, the originals. There's no originals on the team, is there?
No,
I don't think so. No.
Well, at this point you've got the X-Men and then you have X-Factor. And
so the originals are like X-Factor at this point, basically.
Yeah. They've all gone on to be X-Factor. And then you've got kind of like the new young group as the X-Men, and it has to do with, you know, the death of Jean Grey, a fallout with Professor X, a disillusionment with Xavier's vision of what, you know, the X-Men should be as they're pushing.
Was Magneto a baby yet here?
No, Magneto was a hero, but he's like, he wasn't the leader of the team at this point. So this is in the era between when Storm and Magneto were team leaders, and now it's I think Havoc is in charge of the team right now.
Well, he does not act very in charge. He actually acts like a little bitch. But
no, Havoc is like the worst X-Men leader.
Man, was he really the leader here? Because they really did not make that clear. It seems like they're like leaderless. So if he is the leader, he is probably the worst X-Men leader of all time.
It is pretty poor,
I think we can easily say. Anyway, this battle goes, it just goes incredibly awry. I think Storm gets a, for some reason, it's all the women that are so easily influenced. Gee, I wonder why that is. Ooh, pretty pictures. And then we take this weird, after many, many pages of battle, like this battle is like literally half this issue, which I always like. I always like too when characters go bad and they get like a little bit of a sexier look on their face. Like Rogue just, yeah, she has a little sultriness about her now that she's being mind controlled and gone bad here. But then after like halfway through this issue, we take this interesting turn. We head over to Red Rocks, the amphitheater at Red Rocks, where they're setting.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Up for what seems to be some kind of like a what do they call it? Like a mega church type thing from this Reverend Bill. And we see him where he's talking to his wife and he's kind of like, he's saying nice things about mutants. So you already know the way they're setting this up that he is going to be saved by mutants later, spoiler alert, but they make this stuff pretty obvious when a character sort of wistfully thinks about how the mutants are maybe misunderstood. That person is going to be interacting with mutants. But I was kind of like, how are they going to tie this guy in here? What is the point of all this? But this is actually, you know, while at first I kind of thought it was stupid. This is very, very much a hallmark of Chris Claremont. We'll see where this goes by the end of this little run, but he does always try to work in the human aspect and show the interactions between X-Men and mutants, and then show how the world and different people in the world react to that interaction. So that's clearly what he's setting up here, even though it seems very out of place when it first comes into the story.
That's what I always liked about the X-Men. It's these early stories that remind me of that. It's like they don't live in a world that's in a vacuum. It's like where the Avengers, you very rarely had them have a story where it's like, what's the impact or the relationship between the Avengers and the regular world? I mean, other than a Henry Peter Gyrick, who also appears in the X-Men, but at one point he's the Avengers liaison, and I think the Avengers West Coast liaison. You get this a little bit with the Fantastic Four, especially when it was like, you know, they couldn't pay their rent, so they get kicked out of the Baxter Building and stuff like that. But otherwise, it's like all the other heroes are almost just always accepted, whereas it's like the X-Men, there's always problems. There's always something political about it in which they're having to fight for their own justification.
Right. And as the scene wraps up with Reverend Bill, he kind of wishes that he was a mutant. Like he says, sometimes I think I should pray to be a mutant, pray for mutant powers so that I could heal you of your, isn't it? You guys think was arthritis a big thing in the 80s? Like of all diseases they could choose, like you would think they'd choose, I don't know, cancer. Maybe they didn't want to get the Reverend's wife AIDS, but cancer, I don't know, like any tuberculosis, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of not to downplay anyone suffering from arthritis. I thought it was just a kind of an odd choice to be presenting Bill with his existential crisis about being a mutant because his wife is a little sore in the morning. Again, not to downplay.
Well, she couldn't pour him coffee. I mean,
that's true, and that ruins Bill's whole day.
Get a new wife.
And how can you mega church when you don't have your caffeine?
Right. I mean,
it's kind of like Oregon Trail. Oh, I have dysentery now. Oh, you're dead.
Yeah.
We then head back to Denver where these mutants are just tearing the city apart. And, you know, it's mutants versus aliens to us, but to the rest of the world, everybody watching on TV, it's mutants versus mutants. You know, they just see a bunch of mutants and monsters fighting. So to them, it's all mutants. Along the way here, Storm actually saves a full airplane of people. So even in the midst of this battle versus these mutant aliens, Storm is able to go out of her way and save an airplane. Why? Because that's what mutants do. And that's how they, you know, that's what Chris Claremont, again, another thing he would always sort of sneak in. He would always make sure that you knew the X-Men weren't just battling some enemy. Like you might see a lot of superheroes you might see a lot of Man of Steel type stuff where we destroy a whole city and whatever. It's just background noise. But the X-Men would always, I think this is kind of a hallmark of Spider-Man too. Half the time they're fighting the villain, but they're also like always having to jump out of the battle to save all the innocent bystanders that might be getting caught up in things along the way. So I do think that it is a nice little touch to throw in there to remind us what makes these X-Men different from these other alien mutants that they're fighting.
Yeah, she got knocked out for helping out.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really pay off.
Did not pay off for her.
No, but we then cut back to what they're calling God's country, which I guess is, they call Australia God's country. Is that a thing? To Madeline Pryor, who is just, or maybe God's country is inside her fucking mind, because she is completely insane here. She's flying around. She basically has angel's wings. She sees her man Scott and their little baby, and it's kind of like reminds me of manga comic books. They do kind of do these squiggly lines around the panels just to like let you know, hey, this is a dream. This is different than the normal panels you're seeing. Kind of like how manga will do all black outlines if something is a flashback. She sees Gateway in her dreams, and it's almost like Gateway is the one real thing in her dreams, because Gateway kind of traverses dimensions and such. So it's almost like he's like popping into the dream just to like see what this fucking crazy chick that he's watching over for some reason is doing. This is where things get absolutely insane. We see like five versions of Cyclops as Scott turns into Cyclops and is blasting this Jean Grey, this body, this other character, which is like a mannequin, basically. And then Scott goes up to this mannequin and starts making out with it. Or, well, I call it a mannequin. It looks like a mannequin. It's like a faceless body. Starts making out with it as Madeline Pryor is just totally freaked out. And then Cyclops is like, oh, you're only human. And she starts taking the features of Madeline Pryor. This actually gets a lot of, at first when I read this, I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, Chris Claremont should get a lot of points for the creativity that he put in this scene. He starts plucking Madeline Pryor's facial features off, her eyes, her lips, her nose, her hair, and putting them on Mr. Potato Head style onto this other body and essentially recreating it into Jean Grey, who is, of course, the actual love of his life. And then he goes off with her and leaves poor. Now he leaves Madeline Pryor as a featureless mannequin just wandering through the desert. What a fucking horrifying dream.
You know what, though? That's basically what Scott does.
That's what he does in real life. That's the funny thing about this.
Reminds me, if I ever needed real one, life. Because I don't think I ever did, that Cyclops is the douchiest character ever in the X-Men. In Marvel, he is the douchiest character.
And he's never contrite. He never thinks he did anything wrong. He's hardly ever apologetic. And if he is, it's very much just like, anyway, whatever. I'm going to go talk to Emma Frost now. Is this intentional? Because he's essentially always been written as this shitty character, to the point, like, you almost got to wonder if it's an inside joke at Marvel. Like, what kind of douchebag are we going to make him?
This is why I loved the Ultimate version of Cyclops in the Ultimate comics, because he's basically the same thing, except they give him a redeeming factor in which they kill him eventually.
Well, that is redeeming. Too bad it didn't last.
And they keep him dead.
Long. He's back now, right? Or is it still teenage?
No, he's dead.
Cyclops dead again?
No, in the Ultimate comics.
Oh, in the Ultimates. Yeah, well, everyone's dead.
In Ultimatum issue 5, they take him out JFK style. And then he just stays dead.
Maybe I'll read just that one issue.
Just that one panel. It's all you need to take away. They kill everyone, but they especially kill Cyclops.
We do head back to our battle here. And this is when the X-Men kind of, they kind of take the gloves off here. Colossus finally deposes of the one called Brickbat, thankfully, much to my pleasure. And this is where Alex kills a brood, and he feels really bad about it. And they're all just like, hey, dude, it's an alien. Don't worry about it. He's going to kill you. It's not your thing. But then this brood turns back into the human and is kind of like dying as a human. So then Alex refills bad again. And then we basically have the same conversation yet again, like twice in two pages, like, don't feel bad. He was already dead. And Storm makes is a pretty good point. He's like, this guy died the second the brood infected him. So you didn't kill this guy. You just killed this alien brood. So don't worry about it. This issue ends with as they sort of seemingly defeat these current brood that they're battling, Storm also has the revelation. Oh, and by the way, Wolverine was impregnated with a brood egg in the midst of this battle. So something to keep in mind here. I think Rogue took Wolverine away. So now their concern is, well, shit, now there's like brood eggs out there and they're just going to keep infecting the Earth. And now that they have got this idea to infect mutants, we are doomed, which is literally what Storm says wrapping up this issue. The Earth is doomed. Not the most cheerful way to wrap up the second issue of this one. Thoughts, gentlemen.
Dude, I when I think of like what potential alien invasions are like, it's always something like this. Like, they never have humanity's best intentions at heart. They're always just here to like kill us and stuff like this. You know, Why is it?
Except
why is
E.T.
I mean, why is it the and X-Men Alf. Always have to deal with like the living aliens and stuff, whereas the Avengers are always fighting like robots and things? It's like, you know.
Meanwhile, Professor X gets to go off and bang an alien.
Yeah, I mean, Professor X, he just gets to do what he wants while they're dealing with this. It's like,
so where I feel is he bad now? For the where X-Men. Is Professor X right now? He's just not dealing with it anymore. He's over it.
I think he's with the Shi'ar. I think he's with Liara and the Shi'ar.
Oh, this
Empire.
Is for like the yeah. There's like years where he's just living in space, like having alien sex.
Yeah. Right. He can walk well, good again, for him. So he's just walking around banging. I don't know if he has a six pack yet.
Fighting aliens. No, he doesn't have the six pack yet.
He doesn't have the six pack. He's not a fascist yet.
We're going to move on to Uncanny X-Men number 234. Before I dive into the issue, what a badass cover on this one, huh, fellas?
Hell yeah.
This is one of my all-time favorite covers.
Yeah, it's so cool. This one shows in classic Silvestri style shows Wolverine kind of like morphing into a brood with he has like kind of a brood-esque face.
Are they holding up?
And his oh yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you, visual expert. There it is. Come on, sue us, Marvel. Tell us to take down this cover that we're profiting so much from. So diving into the ultimate chapter here of this little brood invasion, X-Men v. the Brood, and shit is going down at the Mile High Diner as this battle rages from the streets into the diner as Dazzler is battling. Here's another one. I'm trying to decide what is the lamest name of these broods. My leading candidate is Brickbat, but I think we have a strong contender in Whiphand. What do you guys think of Whiphand?
Whiphand wins the dumb name competition.
Whiphand? You'll never guess what his power is.
Does he have laser eyes?
What is it, Remzo?
Whipping his hand.
No, but what is it? It's a one's abuse and one is a
oh yeah
punishment and abuse.
Discipline, abuse.
There you go.
Discipline, abuse.
I'm not sure which one Whiphand does, but yeah, that's his power.
Abuse.
I'm not kidding. I've seen him do is hit people and say he's Whiphand. So whoever is using this psychic powers seems to like turn the whole diner. It seems they're being psychically controlled at this point too, because the whole diner kind of like turns against the X-Men too here. So they're just dealing with some shit. When who comes in here? Fucking Longshot. Longshot dives in here. We also see one of these guys, one of these like broods who's almost, I was cheering him on, about to kill Longshot. When again, I told you the gloves are off now. Colossus comes from behind him and snaps his motherfucking neck. This is a violent X-Men. This is the kind of violence I don't recall seeing from the X-Men that I saw, that I read in the 90s.
This is
a lot different.
This is very much the X-Men. Now think about it. They're without their regular leader, Scott. They're without their moral authority, Professor X. And they're in a world that has become increasingly violent. You can straight up see a stark difference between the X-Men after Days of Future Past, in which they're really shown a vision of what like a true existential crisis is. And you can compare that to the X-Men stories of the past and the X-Men stories coming further. They always dealt with extinction, with violence, with the Sentinels and all that shit. But now they're at the point where this is the X-Men who are a lot more morally gray, fighting to survive in most cases. None of the other heroes, really none of the other characters in the MCU, have to deal with this. So it used to be, well, the alien might have a consciousness. Now it's like, fuck this evil cicada thing.
In the next scene, I think we have a new contender. It might not be as lame a name, but this is the way it plays out. We find one of them is named Blindside. And guess what his power seems to be? He's going to come up on your blind side and attack you. That's literally all we see him do. He tries to come up behind Longshot, and that's what makes his name Blindside. Anyway, Storm kills him with a lightning bolt. Another one's name is Spitball. Like, where are they getting these names? These are from, like, the recycled shitty...
Bebop and Rocksteady unavailable?
Bebop and Rocksteady are awesome names and awesome characters, so don't you dare. This is another scene. Maybe you guys can explain what the fuck happened here. The scene... ends. They have this huge battle. The diner is destroyed. And then for some reason we see that maybe it's just to try to be funny, because this couple was like talking before the shit went down. It just shows this couple like kissing. And then we moved on to the next scene.
Yeah. They were making out at the start of the book.
So it's just supposed to be like funny, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll appreciate the attempted humor, I guess. It's just a little toss a little humanity in there for me. That's fine.
So they got lightened up. It's pretty heavy action.
We then head back to this strange facility in the outback where, you guessed it, who's tripping on, who's just tripping her balls? So Madeline Pryor was just completely insane and lost her mind, I guess. Or we'll find out. I think there are, like you mentioned, that she is actually being controlled and manipulated by Mr. Sinister, as we'll find out down the road here. But Gateway is just chilling with her. And what's confusing to me too, like it seems like her dreams were being seen on these monitors. So is this all in her mind and on these monitors? Like, what is, why do we see what's in her mind on the monitors? Do you guys understand
she's
this?
She's projecting it
onto the monitors so Gateway can see it.
I think it's more so done for the service of the reader than it is the characters.
It's done for the confusion of the reader for me. Cause I could just see what's happening in her mind in dream sequence style. So whatever. I don't really understand it. But
yeah, she knocked herself out when she punched the monitor. So she's unconscious right now.
But why is it on the monitors in the first place? Is it because
she's her reader
she's projecting it to herself, but thinks in her mind she's seeing it, not just projecting it. Okay.
All right. And Gateway's just being a creep, hanging out, watching.
Well, it's nice that it's still the movie's still playing while she's there knocked out. But we go back.
Actually, before this, just side note, I knew Gateway because he was part of Nick Fury's Secret Warriors. So when I saw him here, I'm like, what's he doing here? Because I looked at it between like, you know, this arc and when Secret Warrior, or I think it was Mighty Avengers, which was when the Secret Warriors were introduced during the Secret Invasion 2007. He takes like a 20-year hiatus.
Yeah, he's not around for a while. He was around in the early 90s, and then I think they just forgot about him. He went through a portal and then came back.
Nick Fury's recruiting all the people where it's like, I need somebody.
Hey,
he's not in the X-Men right
now. They have a drawer of people of like, you know, heroes and villains that haven't been used in 20 years.
What about Blindside? I mean, is he available?
That's what I would do. Like if a comic company brought me on for whatever reason, was like, we're going to give you any book you could take. I would just research the 10 most obscure characters and pick one of them and write a whole new story from scratch add depth to that character. I would not want to take over a Spider-Man or a Superman or a Batman or anything like that. I would want to go dive deep because then you can't fuck something up, you know. You can't piss off longtime fans if you're taking a character no one can, like. It's I'd be Tom King with Kite Man. That's essentially what I would be.
I was
or
just
James
say
Gunn with Creature Commandos.
Or I'd be James Gunn with Creature Commandos.
Sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say Tom King.
So maybe that's not what I would do. Actually, maybe these are maybe it may be Batman. It is then in that case. Creature anyway, Commandos. We'll find out when that offer comes, kids. But we move on to go back into Madeline Pryor's dream. She's naked now, but she's also a weird mannequin chick, faceless mannequin chick. So she got that going for her. The desert sun is literally starts melting her mannequinness away to reveal her back to her normal self, it seems, when she trips on some kind of bull skull of some kind, falls down to this water where she is greeted by this big purple ogre thing. So that's interesting. Named Sim, SYM. And we learn that Sim is not really real. He is just a product of her imagination. Thank God, because I don't think we need to ever see this character again. He seems to be sort of like a friendly character at first, just kind of like this goofy little purple dragon type thing kind of guiding her along in her own little dream world here. But then she like sees herself his shiny fingernail, and sees kind of like what is like an evil, scary version of herself staring back at her. And he just says, she says, well, this is only a dream. And he says, wrong. There are no dreams, only different shapes, different orders, different tastes of reality. And you've just bound yourself to mine. And then we see her on the ground. Now she's in her sexy leather, and now she has this purple cape, which I guess is signifying this Sim character binding to her. Eric, can you tell me what's going on here as a resident Claremont era X-Men expert? Or are you also befuddled?
So I think what's going on here is the demon's real. This character is recurring.
Yeah, when they tell you they're a figment of your imagination, they're real. If they tell you they're real, they're probably a figment of your imagination. That's how.
Yeah, so he appears multiple times in multiple books. I think he appears in Inferno and New X-Men era, not New X-Men. He appears in
New Mutants.
Yeah, thank you. All the time. So I think what's going on here is he's just kind of turning her into the dark side once again. When she goes into the black costume, she's back into the Goblin Queen. So I think that's what's going on here. He's just kind of pushing her further into the delusion and kind of binding her to him.
All right. I can buy that for a dollar.
I dig it.
We then head over back to Red Rocks with a good old Reverend Bill, who is about to do his superstar evangelist stuff when Rogue flies in with Wolverine. And is it Dazzler she's holding?
I think it's Temptress.
Temptress. This is one of the other lame-ass alien broods. And the mind-controlled Rogue. When they're flying, the knocked-out Wolverine... They always do this. These characters just think Wolverine's in whatever state he's going to be in and always forget, oh, healing factor. So this is going to change. So Wolverine wakes up and kills her just in midair. And then, but as a result, the mind-controlled Rogue lets him sort of just fall. But again, he's Wolverine, so we're not concerned. We know he's going to be okay.
Yeah. Kenny always returns.
We then see the Brood are now in a car. They're in a cop car just driving down the street, being broods, holding Psylocke captive when they run into Colossus. And Colossus Smash is my notes here. They even say Smash. They even show the word Smash in the panel here as Colossus just smashes this car to shreds. The battle has now pretty much entirely spilled over into Reverend Bill's kind of little church, little amphitheater, Red Rocks church thing here. And let's see, as Wolverine shows up to Reverend Bill, he kind of like stumbles his way into the stadium in the middle of this whole thing. And Reverend Bill comes up to him. He's like, kind of wants to like help him. And he looks up and sees him turning into a brood. This is kind of what we were getting on the cover a little bit here. But just as it's happening, and just as the brood arms are coming out about to attack Reverend Bill, suddenly you see the brood yelling, "No, not now, and not so close to victory." And he just retracts and turns back into Wolverine because, of course, Wolverines, which was pretty easy to predict. He'd been reading X-Men for a while. Once you see that cover, you realize, yeah, he's going to start turning into a brood and the healing factor will kick in. Nonetheless, as predictable as it might have been, I enjoyed it, as I often do.
Was it the healing factor, or did he find Jesus, Mark?
Or did Reverend Bill heal him, as Reverend Bill will believe that he did? So it could, hey, maybe it's a little from column A, a little from column B, a little healing factor with a little bit of the Jesus, perhaps.
That's right.
So yeah, the healing factor kicks in just in time. And then just as Reverend Bill is about to get killed by another brood, Havoc just blasts him. This one's named Tension, by the way, Tension we met in the beginning, and kills another brood and once again feels bad about it. So this is the entirety of Havoc's leadership. Is he does kill the bad guy, but then he whines and complains about how bad he feels killing the big bad brood.
Scott would have just been like, okay, next one.
Havoc even looks like a puss in that frame.
But we then realize that we have had yet another false finish here. That is not it. Now Harry, our original evil brood that got infected by the brood from the giant flying shark that we still can't figure out why it was landing in the middle of the woods in Colorado, Harry now has Reverend Bill's wife. For like a second, he was pretending to. It seemed like he was a. I know that happens later. He pretends to be human, right, to try to get to Wolverine, not to kill him. And then Wolverine kind of like crawls underneath the stage and pops out from behind to take out Harry. And then he kind of puts his fist right up to Harry's chin. And this is where Harry returns like into like his human form and tries to beg off, tries to, kind of act like, oh, no, it's just me, the human Harry. Why are you after me? Why are you trying to kill me? But Wolverine isn't really having that. And then I kind of like how they did this. The death of Harry is off camera. We just hear the snicked and then we move on and we all just kind of know what happens, and this is a run that's already shown us some deaths. I mean, we saw Colossus snap a guy's neck, so it's not like we needed the violence to be seen necessarily, and it's not like they're afraid to show us the violence, but I think in this case it actually is kind of more effective that we didn't need to see Wolverine's Wolverine's claws going through poor Harry's head. We knew it happened, and whatever we might envision from that is probably more vile than whatever they would show us in the comic.
What was really shocking about this issue is how they just killed fan favorites like Brickbat and Tension.
And Whiphand? Whiphand is what really upset.
Well, his brother, Pimp Hand, will come back later and seek revenge.
Just like an episode of The Walking Dead, just fan favorites just snuffed out like that.
That'll be SBC's first contribution to the comic world. Whiphand. Pimp Hand, I mean.
Pimp Hand the Brood.
Not only is that in the not only is the brood defeated, which is nice, but in the aftermath we learn that Reverend Bill's wife's arthritis is cured, and Reverend Bill wonders to himself, could it be First that stranger, now Hannah. Has the Lord granted me some kind of healing power? So now he's actually wondering, we're left to wonder, is Bill guided by the hand of God? Is Bill actually developed some kind of healing power? And they just kind of leave that open-ended for us. But not before Bill, when asked by reporters, they're saying, what happened? There's all this destruction from all these mutants. And this is where it does tie back in together, very Claremont style, where Bill goes on basically a whole, this is his end of Captain Winter Soldier screed without the wokeness, really. And he just goes on to praise the X-Men and call for a brighter future when we all work together and such, as we often get with this stuff. And that pretty much ends our episode. And then we end, we got to finish off with one more argument between Havoc and Wolverine about killing and if you should kill people and if you should be happy you kill people and stuff like that. And then we pan out and we see that Madeline Pryor is on the ground here, but we're seeing, this is where I still don't get the screen thing. Like, why is she projecting? This isn't even a newscast. Like, first it was the newscast, but now it's Havoc and Wolverine arguing all on these screens. Or is this like the X-Men's weird monitoring system put in by Gateway, maybe? I don't know. I'm confused by the whole thing here. But anyway, it ends with Madeline Pryor passed out on the ground, and we'll see what becomes of her. So I still don't understand what goes on with the facility and the screens and Madeline Pryor and Gateway's role or what have you. I guess Gateway's like a security guy at this point, pretty much.
He's just professionally unemployed.
All right. Well, it's time for grades, folks. So, Eric, you want to join in on grades with us?
Sure, I would do my best.
They'll count in our official SBC canon. But
well, as I mentioned last time, I'm not a professional, so I'll leave that up to you guys. But I'm more than happy to give my opinion.
Well, why don't we start with your opinion then? How would you grade this as if you were a professional? Try to put yourself in the boots.
It's hefty, but we believe in you, Eric.
If I were a professional. I would probably give the writing on this probably a 3 out of 5. I thought it was pretty good. Story kind of flowed, quick read, lots of action. A lot of it didn't make any sense.
I just want an explanation for the shark and for Rogue being on the bus.
The shark, plus there was a lot of backstory you needed to know.
The Madeline Pryor stuff, I mean, even if you know the backstory and have someone here to walk you through it and hold your hand, it's still confusing and weird.
It was very confusing throughout these three, and I know my X-Men fairly well. So I'll give the writing a 3. For the art, I'll probably give it the same amount, a 3. Wow. I thought the art was the covers on these far outweigh the interior art.
For sure.
A couple of panels in here I thought were a little sloppy, could have been done a little bit better. Expect better out of Mark Silvestri than some of these panels. So give it a 6 out of 10.
Wow, I'm shockingly low for such a nostalgia pick from you. So
there's a nostalgia. I'd give it a couple more points, but
it's good. I like being honest. Critical hat on.
If I'm being honest to the readers.
All right. Well, let's go to someone who will not be influenced by nostalgia because they were not even twinkles in the eyes of Seaman at this point. Remzo, what are your thoughts on this book from what, a decade before you were a twinkle in it?
I'm going to go ahead and give this a few points more narrowly than Eric did. I'm going to agree that the story is a 3, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Is this good for new readers? No, because there is so much backstory. I even think that the Madeline Pryor subplot somewhat gets in the way of a lot of the action. It's a bit jarring going from one thing to another. It's not like they break it off in sections. It's kind of just interwoven throughout the stories for these issues. But, I love the action. I love the stuff with the Brood. Simple, Hollywood B horror. This is a Friday night, monster movie type of thing, alien invasion type of deal, invasion of the body snatchers. I always like this type of shit. I love it. So I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 for the artwork. I do really like the artwork. I'm not a fan of all the renderings of the characters. Like Psylocke needs less clothes, but this is one of my favorite versions of Wolverine's costume. I do really like how they make everyone else look. I like the team. Everyone looks good in the action scenes. They actually are good at drawing a scenery of the world, of the destruction and everything. So I'm going to go ahead and give this a 3.5. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a 6.5 out of 10. So just a tick higher than Eric.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. Well, I'm trying to do that thing where I had ideas in my head and then trying not to be influenced by you guys too much, but also to take into account what you're all saying. And, I think at the end of the day, I'm going to end up at the 3 on the writing too, because I actually think that there are some really good qualities about this stuff. The just just really the way that Chris Claremont handles these interactions that the X-Men have with regular humans. He always works in to these stories, the humanity of the people, the humanity of the X-Men. That aspect is always there. It's never just a battle. It's never just a fight. There's always that aspect of it. And he does really well on that here, which would put a tick higher of like the average fare for this time period, I would say. However, the Madeline Pryor stuff is very confusing, very distracting. You could figure out the Brood stuff even if you had never heard the Brood. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. They're aliens that inhabit bodies. Now they're inhabiting mutants, so this is a bigger threat. That's totally good. But the fact that literally about a third of this is dedicated to Madeline Pryor's trippy like dream sequences and this weird sim fucking purple dragon and Gateway, and none of it's ever explained. In fact, we don't even get the usual Marvel like, hey, for editor's note, to figure this out, go read this issue. I don't think we saw that at all. So that would be very confusing.
Fuck you, true believers. Figure it out.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself, true believers. Just send money. We're doing twice as many X-Men issues this summer.
Give us your money. Catch up.
But So yeah, I'm going to wind up on a 3 for the writing as well for those reasons. There are reasons I think I would maybe have it a 3.5 or maybe even a 4 if it was just this Brood story, maybe in a more fleshed out way. But inserting that Madeline Pryor stuff, it took up too much of this to not factor that in a negative way. So we're going to go down to a 3 for the writing. And like, this is Mark Silvestri, so I'm probably biased a little bit in thinking, oh, it's Mark Silvestri, and his art is very good here, but I don't think he's peaked yet. I think this is before he's really the Mark Silvestri that we know and love. You see it in the cover with Wolverine. That kind of cover becomes what he does all the time with his art eventually, especially when he goes over to Image and really dives into the Darkness book and everything. So while I'm a little biased towards Mark Silvestri, this isn't quite that Mark Silvestri. He's very good. I'll give the art a 3.5. But peak Silvestri could be a 4.5. So he's not that. But so I guess I'll come to a 6.5 total myself. So between, I think for all of us, we're actually around the same realm in a Sunday read, right? It's all a Sunday read. It's inoffensive. If you're into like learning about older books and seeing those older styles, I think this is a pretty good representation, random story of the Claremont area to take a dip into, including the Madeline Pryor weirdness, because that's part of the era. So it gives you a flavor of that too.
Yeah, I dig it.
All right. Well, what else? What else, Remso? You're the housekeeper around here because you're
folks,
the Puerto Rican.
If you want to go ahead and do what you do best, which is mowing lawns and taking care of the stuff that other people, whoever they are, don't want to do, go ahead and check us out at patreon.com/secondprintpod. You can go ahead and produce episodes of the show just like our buddy Eric does. And you get so much more. We went ahead and brought back the Degenerate Panel. We have Remso versus the DCEU. I'm almost done with that series.
I just read Turok Dinosaur Hunter number 1 for you guys in Tales from the Fuck It Pile.
So if you want more of all of that, go ahead and support the show at patreon.com/secondprintpod. And remember, a 5-star review gets you really nothing, but it makes you feel good.
It makes
us really happy. So go ahead and hit up any podcatcher of choice. And remember, if there's nothing else you could do, it's short, sweet, to the point, way easier than getting infected by a brood. It's read comics and change the world.
Change the world.
Good night, America.
Adios.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.